Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast. We're hosted by Kendall and Jackie. And here we talk about everything, well, horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and also the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, the tropes, and new episodes are launched every Monday.
And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Terra Nova Pod. And more importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo. Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Jackie?
I'm doing pretty good. It's not bad. It's actually pretty getting better, the weather-wise. Just want to say that. Wherever you're listening, but here in New York, it's not that bad.
Yeah, you're right.
But I'm excited for this episode, man. Like, holy shit. Like, what, 25, 26 years? Like, yo. Oh, my God.
25, 26 years? You're talking about my whole life. What movie are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Tales from the Hood. Oh.
I feel like that needs a beat
No,
drop.
It hasn't even been like a couple years. Yeah, it does. Burr. Mic drop.
Funk Master Flex come in here, drop some bombs. He be like, did y'all hear me? Boom, boom, boom. Tales from the boom, boom.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, that's how that's how Funk Master be coming in. That should be killing me. I had to get that out of my system. That should be funny as hell.
But, okay. Rusty Condiff, we're sorry, Rusty Condiff, okay? We're sorry.
Yes, so this week we are talking about Tales from the Hood. I guess you could say, yeah, we right there in February, so it's Black History Month. Happy Black History Month, Jackie. Mm-hmm. Happy Black History Month, PL.
Thank you, thank you. Happy Black History Month.
Word, Wakanda forever.
Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew. I'm excited, okay? Let me
know. I know, we hype. Let's introduce the guest so we can get even more hype. All right, cool. So this week we talk about Tales from the Hood, the 1995 film. If you haven't seen it, we're going to get all up in it. Before we talk about it, I'm bringing on one of my good friends, Pierre, my homie. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Good.
I'm excited.
Jackie can't contain herself. I'm good. I'm doing good. Doing good.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So before we get into the film, tell us a little bit about you, man, for people who don't know you. Which is probably everybody, because we ain't never had you before. So tell us a little bit about you.
So hey guys, my name is Pierre. I am a designer and a photographer by trade, and I am generally not a horror fan. So when Kendall talks about his friends who aren't horror fans, I'm usually one of them. But I will pretty much always watch a horror movie if it's black centric. So I learned over time that I basically just, I thought I hated all horror, but then I realized I've seen basically most black horror films and enjoyed them, where there's actually like black leads, not just like one random black person in the film. So I don't know, there might be a term for that, but I guess I fall into that category.
That's pretty dope. I know people like that too. And I'm kind of like that as well, where like I noticed now lately I have been watching like black centric horror movies, because I feel like it's more relatable and more real.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm kind of curious, because that's a point that I always try to make, and I made that with you talking about this. What kind of made you realize that? What made you realize, like, I don't mind the genre so much, but I need to see black people? Like, what made you, when did that moment kind of hit for you?
So Get Out and Us. So Get Out kind of like opened me up to it, just the idea. And then watching Us and like just watching and enjoying the whole movie made me realize, like, oh, when the cast itself, like main cast is like black people, I have no problems like sitting through and watching it, like whatever goes on. And then that made me think back to all the old movies that I've seen. Like I've seen People Under the Stairs. I've seen like the Dawn of the Dead with Ving Rhames. Like I love like Blade is like one of my favorite like movies of all time. Blade 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And it's like I start thinking about like, oh, I've actually seen a lot of like the black horror movies. Even though I claim I don't like horror in general, but it's just like I didn't mind watching those, but I mind watching a lot of the other ones where like black people are kind of just like side pieces,
yeah,
side characters that kind of get tossed aside. I'm not a fan of that at all.
Oh, okay, so the scares don't bother you as much.
And they don't bother. Well, No, I'm a punk. I am generally a punk. Like, especially like with stuff that's like people telling stories that it, like kind of like people telling stories about stuff that really happened to them. Like those, like I do like the worst with. But if it's, but again, if it's black people involved, like as a main story, like as main characters, I can tolerate it.
Okay, okay, that's good to know. Luckily, we kind of awakening in an era where that's actually becoming more common. So you should definitely have a lot more options to watch these mm-hmm. days.
For sure.
And you came in for the perfect film. So, because you're talking about Tales from the Hood. So
this is true.
First things first, before we, you know what? I'll do the plot, first impressions, and I'll ask you about how you kind of feel about the movie. For those who have not seen Tales from the Hood, here's the plot. It is an anthology horror film. And we know how much we all love those. We already did Trick or Treat mm-hmm. and talked about that.
Yeah.
And there's tons of other really good horror anthologies. It just kind of works for the genre. But Tales from the Hood is one of that. Came out in 1995. The director is Rusty Cundiff. I'm not 100% sure if I said that properly. Don't come for me if I didn't. But Rusty Holler, say what up. So the plot of the film is generally that these three, you say gangsters or drug dealers, they are going to this funeral home to meet the funeral director, who is a really creepy guy played by Clarice Williams III. I'm sure I've seen in tons of stuff. He welcomes a group of, you could say, gun-wielding gang members into his funeral home, and they're coming to, like, possibly get drugs, possibly make a deal to, like, you know, get some product to sell and stuff like that. And he tells them a series of stories that relates to different bodies that are currently inside of his funeral home. And the stories are really interesting. They're all cover very important topics, I would say, in the black community, from like domestic violence to gang violence, racism, police brutality. It talks about a lot of things. It's really good. The movie came out such a long time ago, but it's still very much so relevant. It picked up quite a cult following over the years. Yeah, the story is really interesting. One story, it's centered around a civil rights activist that is murdered by police officers, and he comes back from the grave for revenge. Another story is centered around a household that is wrecked by domestic violence and an outrageous monster in the closet kind of dilemma. The other story is about a white supremacist who is running for office, and he decides to live inside of a plantation home and some of the supernatural things that come with that. And then the final story is about this gangbanger who ends up in a shootout for killing somebody, goes to jail, and then is kind of, in a way, sort of seeking rehabilitation for freedom. So it's really, really interesting. All the stories kind of have some supernatural element with social commentary. So it's really, 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 really well done. With that said, let's get into first impressions. I'm going to start with Pierre because he has not seen this film before. So, Pierre, tell me about your first impressions of the film.
So this film, I definitely enjoyed it. Like the four different stories and how they relate to like different black struggles in our community. Like at some point I was like, oh, this is a real horror film, especially like the first scene, like the first act, I guess, with the civil rights activist. I was like, oh, he's just like the cops are really just beating his ass, like just going at him. I'm like, that's when I realized, like, oh, this is a real horror film. I even wrote that down. Like, this is a real horror film. This is no joke. Cause that was like terrifying. I was like, dang, they really just whooping him for no reason. Like, I mean, it wasn't for no reason. He was basically taking them out for being the assholes that they were.
Yep.
But then I definitely was, I love that story, that whole story arc, how even though like the activist died, I was looking back up in the car. I'm like, yo, you're just sitting in the car while they're beating his ass and you're not doing nothing. Like, you're not even paying attention. I mean, eventually he kind of like realized what was going on after he realized who the guy was. I'm like, even if you didn't know who the guy was, you still should have been like, hey, y'all need to chill. When he came back out and he's like, hey, you guys need to chill. Like, they're like, oh, we're going to take him to the hospital. I was like, if this black cop does not take them to the hospital himself, if he doesn't take them to the hospital himself, this dude is going to never be seen again. And of course, he didn't take him. So then it kind of like, it does like a time jump. Like the guy's no longer a cop and everything like that. He's still like, he's a drunkard and everything now. He's kind of like, I guess he just really felt bad about the whole situation, which he should. But I liked the story arc went where the ghost of the spirit of the guy was like, hey, bring them to me. And he did it with no hesitation, basically. Oh, I remember that. Like, so I pay attention to, like, I like the way some certain shots are filmed.
Mm-hmm.
So when he first was walking around, like, drinking in the street, and he got to the mural of the civil rights activist, there was a really cool spinning shot where the camera panned around him while he also spun around. I was like, oh, that's just a really dope shot to have in a film. It just looked really cool. And then, like, that same shot came back later on in, like, with a different character for that scene, like, for that same act. And I was like, oh, they did it again at the same location. It was just a really cool, like, effect. That's just something I pay attention to when I'm watching movies also now. But overall, like the way that story arc went with him, like, taking him to the grave, and then basically, like, them just the guy, the really annoying cop took a piss on the grave, and I was really hoping that something would reach up and, like, just pull his dick off, but it didn't.
Me too. Same.
And then, like, he made the other cop go, and then, like, it pulled him. They didn't pull him down by his dick, but it pulled him down and, like, just killed him, and then pulled him in. I was like, okay, this is going the way I was just 100% on the side of the zombie, and I'm like, I think that's a first for me. Like, usually when these kind of things are happening, like, I'm really bad with jump scares and stuff like that. And this was, like, the first time in a movie where I'm like, no, I need to sit closer to the screen, not sit back. I need to sit closer to the screen and watch everything happening. So I'm like, I'm hoping he gets them. Like, they're running away. They're in a car. I'm like, yo, I kept saying to myself, I hope he just, like, appears in the car and just, like, grabs them. It's just like, I was just really happy with the way that scene played out. Cause every time they turned and went somewhere, he was just, like, walking closer to them, even though they were driving in the car. They just couldn't get away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was awesome. Like, I didn't realize I could be so on board with, like, the quote unquote bad guy. And he's not really the bad guy, but, like, the zombie creature in the film. I was just like, I was 100% like hoping he got them. And he did.
You sound like you enjoyed the hell out of this.
I did. Like, yeah, that was a great start. I definitely, one of my notes was, oh, I definitely wrote fuck the police. I definitely wrote fuck the police.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
Yeah, I was not happy with, like, with the way that it was starting off. It's kind of funny because, like, this is kind of the first thing, but we kind of skipped the fact that, like, we got to this story because the main character for this story was dead in the funeral home. And, like, I remember, like, just the lead up to that, like, I enjoyed the banter of, like, the three dudes leading up to going into the funeral home to kind of, like, get to the scene.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the dudes was kind of me, because, like, he was like, I'm not going to the funeral. He just didn't want to go inside. And, like, and if I was there, I'm like, I'm not going inside this funeral home. First of all, it seemed like there was already rumors about it, like, being a kind of a sketchy place, because apparently people kept talking about, like, there being, like, dead bodies, like, but, like, people coming alive. And one of the guys was even like, man, if a dead guy come at you, just shoot him. And I was like, hold on. And then the character was like, hold on, if he's dead, how do I kill him? Like, he's already dead. And I'm like, I'm like, this dude gets it. I hope he doesn't go in, but he went in.
Word.
But yeah, like, as you can tell, like, I definitely enjoy, especially this first act. I definitely, like, I was happy with how it played out.
Jackie, you an excited one. You could burst with joy now. Tell me about your first impression.
Oh my God. Where do I begin? I watched this. I know I was young. I don't remember how old I was, but I remember I was young. It was when my siblings were still living in my house, and we all watched it together, and we were just like, holy shit. Like, it was amazing. Some of the stories I didn't understand for a bit, because, you know, I was a kid. And then rewatching it now was just like, wow. It hit differently. If, you know, it still makes me excited, because it's so good and brilliant. And it's funny how some people do label this film as a horror comedy, but Rusty actually doesn't see it as that, because he's like, there's nothing funny about it, which you could understand why when you're watching it. Like Pierre said, like, the first one really hits hard. Like, that one hits very close to home. And it was, I remember I told Kendall, I was just like, I forgot how horrifying the first story was, how it began, but how satisfying that ending was. Like, it was just so satisfying. You're just like, yes, get your revenge. And I like how in all the stories, yeah, like, there was some darkness to it. Like, the first one, domestic abuse, and, you know, the third one and the fourth one. And they all had, like, yeah, some commentary about social, especially the last one. The last one kind of reminded me, especially with the experimental portion of it, it really gave me a Clockwork Orange vibe, where they try to rehabilitate the guy who rapes everybody into being a human again. And it kind of reminded me of that, where he was trying to, you know, kind of put him back in society, like, oh, look at all this stuff, you know. That's what it gave me. But it's just so brilliant. Like, so smart. It's just, like, I mean, it is horrifying because it shows horror for us. That's what we go through, you know? Just, Rusty did an amazing job. I could spend a whole hour talking about how much I fucking love this movie, but I'm not. But but it's just so good. Like, I love all the stories, especially the second one, the domestic one. That, I think, is my favorite one. That was always my favorite one. You know, the boys don't cry thing. That was my favorite one. The way he just took control of it and sort of break, like, he he killed him by drawing him and then twisting the paper around. And then I just, that also was satisfying. I was just like, yeah, get yours, burn. And I love the whole metaphor he used for comparing the monster to the abuser, which I thought was, and that is how kids are. That's how kids, you know, kind of, you know, talk about that when they're drawing that's how they communicate that. And it's just, it was just so good.
Yeah, with that story, especially, I remember watching that story and I was like, man, I really hope like the monster isn't like a euphemism for like some kind of sexual abuse, because it kept coming to me at nighttime. I'm like, I hope it's not like her dad's, her, like her mom's boyfriend or something come in like and abusing him or something like that. But it did, like, not to say that like domestic, like physical abuse is worse or lesser than sexual abuse. I'm just like, at least it didn't go that direction, but it wasn't good either way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just like, I really hope it's not something like that, but it was. The dude was definitely a monster.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this movie so fucking much. Like, I've told so many people about this film, so many people who have never seen this film. I did, like, movie nights with friends for this film because I was just like, oh, I would, you know, when people start talking about horror movies, the conversations, you know, they always start in a certain place, right? Everybody goes, oh, you're a fan of Freddy, you're a fan of Jason, you're a fan of Chucky, you're a fan of Hellraiser, you're a fan of Michael Myers, like, and then that's kind of where the conversation, I feel like, for the most part, stops, unless people are, like, really, really into topic. And even when they think anthologies, they don't really get, a lot of people just don't mention this film enough. And I remember, I was always like, nah, have you ever seen Tales from the Hood? You know, because people always go, oh, Tales from the Crypt? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, Tales from the Hood. Like, have you seen that? Because I love Tales from the Crypt, but have you seen that? And a lot of people be like, nah, I've never heard it. I'm like, have you never heard of this? This movie is amazing. I think the first time I saw this movie, I was, I think, 8 years old. I know I was a kid. I was definitely younger than 10, probably something like that. This movie came out in 95. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely probably around 8 years old when I first saw this film. I was like, I was just so blown away by it. Like, it does a lot. It does a lot. Like, all of the stories are unique. All of the stories don't involve the same characters from story to story. And then, you know, you have the main story of the guys talking to Mr. Sims, who runs the funeral home. So there's like, there's not a lot going on, but there's kind of like, there's a lot of things happening that are all very striking. Like, none of these stories pull punches in any way. Like, they'll call racism, racism, police brutality, domestic violence. Like, they're not pulling punches in terms of what they're saying. They're not even like gesturing or hinting at it. They're like, no, this is what the issue is. And I really love that. And even as a kid, that struck me. And I remember the thing when I was a kid and I first saw this movie, the thing that stuck with me the most was always the ending. When Mr. Sims, he's just like, this ain't no funeral home. This ain't the Terror Dome neither. It's hell. Like, that just stuck with me.
Oh, man. I love that. Like, that's like, that was quote worthy.
Yes. That shit stuck.
Yeah, you're like, walk up to hell.
That visual just stuck with me as a kid, of like him with the wings and the horns and there's fire everywhere and the guys are like, ah, like that visual was the first thing I always remembered about this movie as a child.
Yeah, I can see that stick, how that can stick with you.
Yeah, it's crazy. The stories are fantastic. I love every story, but that visual just like really, really sat in my head. Like, even as a kid, you know, I feel like it's a fortunate and unfortunate part of being like being non-white, essentially, right? Like, your parents talk to you about things like racism and police brutality, like, even at a young age. So because of that, even at a young age, I understood the messaging and the what they were going for in a lot of the stories. So I was like, yeah, like, I get it. Like, my parents have made me aware of some of these issues. But it definitely doesn't hit any less hard knowing that. So, yeah, it's a great film. Great, great film, Alden.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially now.
Can we just talk a little bit more about Walter, though? Like, that story, like, there were so many things. First of all, David Alan Greer, as, like, he played a convincing bad guy. I just want to point that out.
Yes, yes.
Like, he played a convincing bad guy. Like, I don't remember ever seeing him in another, like, role as a bad guy. but like he played it very convincingly, and he whooped everybody's ass. Like he beat the boy's ass, he beat the lady, the mom's ass, and he beat the teacher's ass. Like he just whooped everybody. Like all three of them stood no chance until like the boy got to the drawing. But like he was just like throwing hands on everybody. Facts. And it was just unexpected, like to see him in that role and to do it so well. It was just like I was like, okay, you did your thing here. As a bad guy, I don't like it, but I do like love that you dedicate yourself enough to play it well.
Word.
Yeah, like a little back. We mentioned this before, but when we were reviewing the what is it? Was it noir? Like black horror films horror and noir. Whatnot, and they said that how. The reason everybody was surprised with that role, everybody was surprised by him in that whole story, The Boys Don't Cry. And they said that how his background is Shakespearean background. So he is a method actor. He can put himself into any role and just do it flawlessly. And I was also very impressed by that. I'm just like, wow. And I love when actors do that. I love that how they can show how versus how they can be. Because people really just know him as, oh yeah, he's that funny guy, he's the comedian guy. But no, he can act. And he proved that he can act.
Facts.
He redid. Like his role was not long in that whole scene. He came at the very end basically. But like he played the hell out of it. Like he was convincing from like his entire time on screen. And like, can we talk about how trash the school system is also? Like you know police, like this movie establishes early on that police are garbage, but the school system is garbage too. The boy came in and the teacher introduced him to the class, whatever, right? And then after he got into a fight and the nurse sees him, she's like, oh, your black eye is a few days old. I'm like, so hold on. This teacher escorted this boy single-handedly to the classroom and ignored the fact that he had a black eye, a days old black eye that whole time. Like, he just didn't see it. and then like, it took like two or three more times for him to come with bruises for them to like even think about calling the parents. I'm like,
that's how it is, though. That's exactly how it is, because I worked in daycare and we had to learn about that stuff. Like they have to be, you know, caller. We see signs, and that's how it is sometimes. And it really is fucked. It's really messed up. It's terrible. And but I just want to say for that episode too, for Walter, like I love how they put in his I guess quote unquote magic power, which was art, which was drawing. And he used that as a meme to basically get back, not just at the bully, Tyrone. I mean, that was hella funny. Freaking crumbled the paper and Tyrone broke all his limbs. Yo. And like, how did the boy do that? I'm like, he had it coming. He was a bully. He had that shit coming. But then to get his revenge of the monster, his stepfather, you know, like that was just so satisfying. And even at the end, this guy is still like, I'm gonna kill you all, I'm gonna get you, this ain't over. I'm like, bro, you is flat. You is flat on the floor. What are you gonna do? What you gonna do? Wobble to us?
He was still talking trash. Yeah. Like that's how you know like somebody's bad. He's like even when he gets asked, he's still talking trash. Like you are crumbled, can't do nothing, you still threatening people.
That's
Come
a
on,
villain.
Man.
That's a true villain.
Word.
I love when he was like, this ain't over, motherfucker. I died laughing. I was like, I know this ain't funny, but that was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It's like he was committed. He's like, nah, I'm getting y'all. And Tyrone, like, I mean, I know Tyrone was the bully, but like, he kind of, I felt bad that he became just a plot device. Like, he just, the boy accidentally crumbled up paper, and then the boy just like, all his bones, his arms and his legs is just snapped and broke, and he fell down the steps. I'm like, sorry, kid. Like, I mean, you needed to be taught a lesson, but this is harsh.
Yeah, word. Both arms and legs.
This is a really, yeah, this is an excessively harsh way for the boy to learn about his power.
I love how they were so confused about it, too. They're like, how'd this happen? They were like, I don't know. He was just walking down the stairs and then he just fell. No one pushed him. No, it was just weird. It just happened. I don't know. And I'm just, that had me dying. He's like, they're like,
he said the boy must have weak bones.
Yeah.
He must have weak bones.
He basically called him Mr. Glass.
Mr. Yeah, Glass. Basically.
Oh, my God.
That was his origin story. And then it became Unbreakable.
Yep. For the record, though, this movie's definitely inspired quite a few movies online because I saw some that the elements of the whole twisty trap from the Saw thing with David Lyon Greer, like his end game, like we all twisted him around and then the you know, with Mr. Glass with the boy falling, the boy's bones breaking. And then the cop, the last cop who was being attacked by the zombie in that first act,
mm-hmm.
he crucified him to the mural, like before he turned him into painting, he looked like Steven Dorff at the end when Blade had threw all the vials at him and he just kind of ballooned up.
Oh yeah.
Like he kind of
the guy kind of melted and looked like that. So I'm like, oh, this movie came out before all those movies. So maybe people act like they never heard of it, but it definitely had its influences on people in the know.
Oh my god, I love that scene. That final scene when he was like melting, and Kendall knows how much I love special effects. So that whole scene with the special effects, that Kendall knows how much I love special effects. I just love how simple that scene looked, where he was melting and he turned into the mirror. I was like, wow, special effects, man. I love it.
That's a hell of a way to start any story. But that first story with the civil rights leader was like really, really crazy. Because there's just so many things about it, right? Like, you know, obviously the history and today, as Jackie was alluding to earlier, the history and today of like black people's interactions with police officers. But to think like, oh man, they literally pulled over a civil rights leader. Like they pulled over somebody that they knew had pull in the community and still was like, don't give a fuck. We just gonna beat the shit out of them. Pretty crazy overall. Of course, like Pierre said, he was like, I don't know why this black cop thought that they was going to take him to the hospital. Because it was like, what did they think he was going to say if he went to the hospital and then recovered? Like, he's going to act like nothing happened. Of course, he's going to call out who did it. His whole job is to call out who does these things. So I was like, I don't know what that dude expected. Mm-hmm. Of course, he probably, I don't know, wishing for the best because he was a rookie. So, you know, there's that aspect of him being a rookie and then the police officers who have more pull, which we've all heard when you hear a lot of stories about police brutality and about how they kind of work, or that blue wall, blue thin line, or whatever they call it. You hear about how that works, so they kind of protect each other. So they kind of wanted him to get on board with that, which clearly, to an extent, he was not. Like he made it very clear out the gate he was not cool with it. He if they would have let him, he probably would have beat up the officer because he kept trying to jump at him, and his partner kept pulling him back, like, nah, chill. Like we look out for each other, which should have just told him, like, nah, we only look out for each other when it's motherfucking convenient. You ain't really like looking out for each other. Because if you do any investigating into police departments, there's so many issues, even racially, internally. So I'm like, you ain't really looking out for each other. You're looking out for a particular amount of y'all. So there's that. But yeah, that story was really interesting. How he pretty much went crazy from the events of the attack and just was like, he never really recovered from it. He left the force entirely. They even kind of laughed at him for leaving, like, oh, this dude couldn't deal with it.
No, I was gonna say that how, like, and that happens in real life. That's a real life thing. Because there's so many stories of, like, cops that do quit the force because of that. Because they don't want to partake in that whole, the bingo thing. And that's what it's called. It's the bingo. It's the police department bingo. You have a quota to reach. Yeah. And they do that in real life. Like, they do that. We're always seeing the news about how some politician who's fighting for rights ends up quote-unquote missing, quote-unquote dead. It's like, we know what they did with them. We know what happened. We know how the system works. The part when the politician is talking to the cops and they're like, oh, what about the good cops? He's just like, I have nothing against good cops. It's you guys. And that too, you know, you do hear stories about, well, there are good cops in the force, but then why are they doing anything? And people forget that when they do speak up, they get fired. They get blackmailed.
Yeah.
They can never work in the force ever again. Yeah, and they kill them. That happens too. So that whole first story, like, yeah, like it was triggering, horrifying, but it was fact. It was real. That was real horror brought into the screen.
Yeah, very much so. And the cop will quit. Like, the cop will quit. Like, he got his at the end too, because the guy was like, hey man, when I needed you, you weren't there. Like, you were right there and you didn't do anything about it. Like, even if you had to fight them off me, like, he was basically like, even if you had to fight them off, you'll pull me out of there. You didn't do it. You basically just let them have their way with me, even though you knew it was wrong because you saw it and you spoke up about it, but you didn't go that hard.
Yeah.
So like, he's like, you know what? You can get it too. I ain't gonna do you like I did them, but you're gonna get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that. I really like that he said that, because that is a part of it, right? Like, to your earlier note, Pierre, you were just like, cool. Yeah, he looked him up to see who he was, but doesn't really matter who he is. Like, look what's happening. Look what's unfolding in front of you. Mm-hmm. It don't matter who he is. Does that mean if it was a regular civilian, you'd have been like, ah, it's all right? Or even if it was a drug dealer, would you have felt like, oh, cool, like, it's a drug dealer, he can take this? Like, it don't matter who it is, man. Do your damn job, arrest him or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that whole first scene, like, that was an intro.
Yeah, that was definitely an intro. Yeah, like how the three guys who heard the story, he was like, yeah, they deserved that, yeah.
Yeah, word. That story is crazy. All of these stories are great, though. I ain't gonna lie, I've always I'm gonna ask you guys like what your favorite stories are, because I know you kind of hinted at it anyway, but I just want to get that part out the way, because I definitely want to talk about my favorite story. But I will let you guys go first. Jackie, which one is your favorite story?
Boys Don't Cry, the Walter one. That was my favorite. As a child, that was my favorite, and as an adult, that's still my favorite story. Well, I kind of explained why earlier, because you know I just love how his superpower, quote unquote, was art, drawing. You know, sometimes when kids are going, or they're going child psychology sessions, they always ask the kid to draw what they're feeling, and sometimes they'll draw the most horrifying, darkest thing ever because they can't verbally say what's mm-hmm. happening to them. So they'll do it in a different medium, and that's how they'll see it and be like, "Oh my god!" And I love how he used that as his means of protecting himself and his mom. You know, I love how he got back at, you know, the monster, and for, you know, freaking bended his limbs everywhere, squished him. And then, you know, when the teacher first sees him draw, like sees his drawing, he's just like, "Oh yeah, you know, this girl behind me told me that her mom told her to draw her monsters and then throw it out or burn it, and then you get rid of it." And he said it. He was like, "I'm gonna burn him alive," and that's exactly what happened at the end. He burns him alive.
How about you, Pia?
My favorite, like, so the third story with the dolls, we have talked about yet, but like, I liked a lot of elements from that. So it comes as a close second, but my very favorite story is the first one with the cops. And it's just like, I'm just like, it's something I'm very vested in, like in my own personal life. And like, I'm always like talking about these things and learning about these things. And then I like the story itself was really on point. The cinematography was really great. And the fact that there was a dude, a black zombie, like basically playing the role of Jason, where these dudes aren't, they aren't running away. They're driving away, and he's walking and catching up with them. Like, I loved all the elements of that first film. So that one takes the cake for me. That's my favorite. Oh, and of course, like that whole melting scene that looks like Steven Dorff at the end of Blade. Like, I love that too.
I'm gonna have to look up just that clip again, just to compare them. My favorite story, hands down, and the one that I probably think about the most, aside from, you know, that dude scaring the hell out of everybody at the end, is the one, like Pierre was just hunting out, the one with the dolls. The one with the dolls.
Oh, the plantation one.
That story is, to me, hilarious as fuck. Obviously, it's not meant to be funny, but it's funny as hell to me. And it feels like a callback and kind of just like everything that I like about horror, and especially like goofy horror. Like, for the, I know we talked mm-hmm. over it briefly, but the story is basically this white supremacist politician. He's running for office, and he decides during the middle of his campaign is that he is going to move into a plantation. Like, this is in the South. I don't think they specified what city or anything, but in the South, he moves into this house that used to be a former plantation. And the community, especially the black people in the community, just make it very clear, like, this isn't a good idea. He's like, we kind of only kept this house around as kind of like a memorial to, like, you know, a dark past. It probably isn't the best idea for you to live here. And he was just like, "Nah, fuck all that. I'm gonna just live here. It's a really nice house. I don't really mind the past too much." Even in his own past, he used to be a Klan member. So it's like, and then people, but part of the reason that people are also telling him not, there's also a, I guess you could say, a folktale or a story that goes around that the house is kind of haunted. There, because of the souls that have suffered there due to slavery, that there is a possibility that there are dolls there that will attack anyone that they don't necessarily approve of, and it will haunt them and possibly kill them. And but it's just a tell. Some people don't believe it. Even some black people don't believe it. But it's really funny. That story just really cracked me up, because I just loved how it unfolded. It felt so much like Child's Play. It felt like kind of like a black version of Child's Play, but even more terrifying. Honestly, those dolls were did more and were more terrifying than Chucky. Like, and I'm saying, even to me as a black person, they were terrified, because the way they went about it, there's like this beautiful painting of this woman and a bunch of these dolls that they said, some people say that she used voodoo to put the souls of some of the lost spirits inside of these dolls, because at one point during slavery, the owner of this plantation went mad and just massacred hundreds of slaves, apparently, because a bunch of them were running away. And her saving grace was to put a few of their souls inside of these dolls to give them some place to wreak revenge. And that, the way it kind of unfolds, is just so funny. The guy who is at the main politician is so unlikable on every level. He says, nigga, anytime he gets a chance, he knows all the racist terms. He called people spooks. He was saying all that. This dude was completely unlikable. Even his campaign manager, who was a black guy, mixed dude, he even didn't really seem like he liked the guy. He was just there for the paycheck. It was a very interesting dynamic, and the dolls just harass him, and everything about that shit is funny as hell. What did you guys think about that story?
I gotta say one thing. Before we started doing this episode, I remember Kendall briefly mentioned this particular story, and he was just like, yo, the story, man, that's Trump right there. I was like, oh my God. I was like, oh my God, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah, nah, this dude was a dick. But his name was Duke, so his name was Duke, and I'm pretty sure like they based him off of David Duke,
yeah,
that asshole. Like he was a former like Ku Klux Klan leader. He became a politician. He has like all these Trump esque conspiracy theories. Like I kind of want to see a version with both of them, like one with Trump and one with him, like playing a role and getting destroyed at the end of it. It'll be awesome. But yeah, like that whole scene was like the lore of it. You had the kind of the trope with the old guy, the one guy who's like, nah, you shouldn't go in the house, man. That's what has all the spirits there. They don't want you there. There's always that one guy who like knows like the whole history and is like, this is why you shouldn't do this. He warned him like two or three times. He's like, he went to him when he was in the limousine or the car, and he was like, I'm telling you, man, you really need to leave. Like this ain't good, man. They don't want you there. They killed that one dude because they ain't like him. He was a traitor. But they really want you gone, so you best leave while you have the chance. And of course, he didn't heed it. And I have to say, I'm glad that he did not heed it.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool. Like, I do like that story too. Like, that was also like a really good tale, you know, with the whole you had the voodoo priestess who bought the house to, you know, put the spirits into peace, and then when she died, I thought it was really like interesting when he tried to destroy the painting. And then he's hitting it, and then you see like blood coming out of her mouth, and he's just like, "Holy shit, what's going on?" And it's just, when I saw that, I was like, "This is why you don't mess with voodoo. Like voodoo, you don't touch it, you don't go near it, you don't disturb it. Just don't. Like, what are you doing? You don't mess with that. Like, are you surprised? I'm not surprised. Like, come on, you don't mess with that, man. You just don't." And yeah, like Pierce said, I'm actually glad he didn't heat it because he got eaten. He got eaten by 1,000 dolls.
Yeah, that was great. That was so fucking good.
Yeah, he really did. No, I was just saying, like I love the fact he got torn apart. I'm not 100% on board with the fact that they made the black people cannibals, but I am happy that he got torn apart at the end, though. Like, I was just like, I'm kind of spit on it. Like, I can go both ways on it, but I'm like, he needed to go, and he needs to go in a horrible fashion. I was really hoping that he didn't like burn the place down to kind of end it, but so luckily it didn't go that direction. Yeah. I was just happy he just took it. He didn't have a choice.
Yeah, I think he had too much pride to burn it down. I think he had far too much pride for that. Because even, let's be real, the moment the first doll appeared out of the painting, he could have left then. Like, he saw it in the car. Remember, they all talked at the very beginning and was like, well, they say there's dolls in this house. Like, his campaign manager said to him, he was like, they say there's dolls in this house. Have you seen any? And he's like, I've searched every inch of this home. We didn't come up with nothing. So I just believe it's a tale. People, whatever, it just spooks the locals. Like, because I didn't find anything. And then he finally sees one inside the limo when he gets in the limo. And he's like, he's kind of like, somebody put this in here? And I loved it. I forgot that actor's name, the one who played his driver. But he was like, did anyone come in here? And he just looked at him with that face like, man, nobody come in this damn car. I forgot the actor's name.
He's like, ain't letting nobody in here. He's wrong.
But he just was like, man, ain't nobody come in this car. What are you talking about? And he was like, oh, all right. And he just threw the doll out. I'm like, at that point.
His expression.
Word. His expression said it all. His expression was like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? But at that point right there, he could have just got out like, nah, this ain't a good move. We said we couldn't find any. Now it's just popping up. But like, what's wrong with you, dude? But the scene that made me crack up laughing, and I always think of when I think of this story, is after he quote unquote kills the first doll, when he straps it to a dartboard and he shoots it with his rifle, and he's like, yeah, that's what you get. And then he goes back in the room to look at the painting, and he realizes that 4 more dolls are missing. The look on his face cracks me up every time. He's just like, he just goes, God damn. Like that. That gets me every time.
I know, like, it was so stupid how, like, he leaves the door, locks the door, runs out, sees the one that he kills come back, and then he's like, oh my god, unlocks the door, goes back into the room where the painting is, and then you see all the dolls are gone, and he's just like, oh my god.
He knew it was over at that point.
I love that.
He started turning out his hair. He's like, no, this can't, this ain't it. This, he was not happy. he knew it was over at that point. And like when the first doll came back and he had a shotgun and he was just so nervous that he couldn't get the bullets in. He had butterfingers. I was like, just drop it. And I was hoping that when he went to go pick up things, the doll's gonna get him. And the doll tried. I give him points of trying. He just barely missed him.
Yeah, that was so good. So good. That tail always cracked me up. And I think, I ain't gonna lie, this is probably a side note, but I think that's the first time I ever heard somebody say Neglet. Like, I think I was like 8 years old when I saw this movie. And I was like, Neglet? Like, what? do people say that? Like, that was so random.
Yeah, that's old timey racism right there. Yep.
But, oh, God. But yeah, that one, yo, again, it's so funny. I love how she was in the background, too, the voodoo priestess. She was just there with her rocking chair, like, yeah. Let it all happen. I'm just here knitting my sweater.
Word, she was like, yeah, fuck that guy. And she deserved to chill. Because every time he saw anything, he was like, that voodoo, bitch. I was like, word, dude, every time.
Mm-hmm.
That cracked me up.
And when they mentioned that how it was a voodoo, you know, priestess that she bought in and, she, you know, she did that and then she died. Okay. In lore, even when someone like that dies, their presence still lingers. Everybody knows that about voodoo and hoodoo. You can't just assume, like, okay, this place is clean. Nah, son. She left the touch there. You don't mess with it. You don't touch it. You don't. You just don't. It's a big no-no. Even I know that.
Word. What I want to ask you guys, how did you feel about the last story? Like, I guess we'll start with you, Pia. Like, how did you feel about the last story? Did you like it? Did you just like it? How'd you feel about it?
I liked a lot of elements of it. So, it was, so I kind of, when it opened up, right, the guy is driving and he sees somebody. He's like, oh, I know this guy. I know that fool. I'm gonna get him. He smokes him. He has like kind of have one of your little nigga moments, like a la Boondocks. And then he shoots the dude. He's standing talking crap for a few seconds and then he starts running because he knows, like, oh, let me get back to my car, get out of here. As he's running, three dudes pop out of the house and they start shooting him and they catch him. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I was looking at them. I was like, I wonder, in my head, the first thing I thought was like, I wonder if these are the three dudes that are in the thing, because they said they knew the dude. Like, when they saw the coffin, they were like, oh, we know who this guy is. And like, and one dude's like, nah, we don't know him like that. We just seen him around. I'm like, okay, that's kind of sketchy, but okay. And then, like, I was like, then the street, I'm like, oh, I wonder, but you couldn't see their faces clear. So I wasn't sure. I was just like, oh, maybe it's them, but it wasn't clear enough at all. And then it kind of went into this whole arc where he got shot, then they got shot, and then, He survives somehow, like, and then, like, it goes on that off onto that whole arc with him being in prison, and then he ends up being the doctor comes, the back doctor comes in, and he becomes the, she asks him, you know, do you want a get chance to get out? And he's, at first he's like, you just messed with me, and then she's like, nah, this is serious. You can do something for us, then we can get you out. And he's like, okay, cool, let's do it. And then the experiment, like, he gets taken to the place where the experiment is. And I'm like, this place looks really weird. Like, this is some really sketchy, dank, dark place. They have pretty maids, like pretty girls in like the little nurse maid outfits, and then they have the really brolic looking orderlies there, along with the doctor, or scientist or whatever she was. And then they strap him into this machine. I'm like, oh, this is a really sketchy looking contraption. Like they have him on, and I think the last part. Oh, the nose tube! Like, that was a gigantic tube. They shoved up his nose.
Yeah, word.
Like, that thing was huge. That was not like no regular size skinny breathing tube. That was just a gigantic. Like, how did that fit up his nostril? I felt so bad for him. Like, I didn't like him, but I still felt bad for him in that scene. Like, that can't be comfortable. Oh, and then the last part was like, it locks in your crotch. So she kept twisting it, and he's like, "Yo, stop!" And she just gave it like one last extra twist.
Yeah.
That, and then they do the, she does like the whole, it starts going through a lot of MK Ultra type experiments. You know, the flashing lights and the scenes. The scenes were crazy, like those lynching photos.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, these and like, this is just wild. And they mixed it in with memories of him like shooting people and killing people and being in other shootouts and whatnot. And then like they just kept flooded it in with the the pictures of like white people lynching, like all the lynch mobs of them hanging black people and killing black people and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this is like super intense, and like this is a triggering scene, but this is really wild. It kept escalating, and then they took him to the next phase of it with all the flashing lights. Like that's like another torture type thing that they do to people, where they keep flash the I think she called it deprivation.
Yeah, sensory deprivation.
Yeah, and kept the flashing light, and then he just started seeing the ghosts of like the people that he killed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was talking to them. At the first ones were all like people who like he was having stress with back and forth. He's like, y'all kept my friends. Like I kept y'all, and y'all were gonna come at me too. And then it kept going a step further. Like, oh well, I was the right dude. Like I was even near where you guys were. And then it brought the little girls. Like, well, I was just in my room and you killed me. Like, he's like, bullets don't got no name. Like, I'm like, really, dude? That's how you gonna play?
Yeah,
this?
Word.
And it's just like more and more and more people just kept like it was just like a mob of people of like they were just confronting him about it. And doctor kept saying like, look, you need to face this and like you need to own up to it. Basically, like if you want a chance to make it out of this, you got to own up to it. And he just wasn't about it. And he stuck true to like his Goonie ways. It's like to the very end. He's like, she's like, look, you're not strapped in. You can just do whatever you want. And this is your chance to like, to go and be a different person. And he's like, nope. He just stuck with it. He took the nurse lady and, was just like, look, I'm threatening her. And then she's like, okay, you made your decision. And then at that point, that's when like it flashes back to like him being in the real world. And that's, he has the three people standing over him shooting him, and I think they had asked him a question like, "Hey, do you want to get shot in the head or you want to get shot in the chest?"
Yeah,
and he's just like, "Whatever," and it's like, "Okay," and they just capped him. But like, I like how that whole scene was like, because in those kind of situations where you're about to die, you always hear like people say, "Oh, my whole life flashes before my eyes." This was kind of a version of that, but it didn't go like it wasn't like scene by scene of like, "Oh, this is what I was doing, this is what I was." They mixed so much else into it, and I like that aspect of it. Like, look. It was kind of like another way to portray him fighting for his life. He's like, look, if you are really willing to change, we're giving you an opportunity here to face all the crazy shit, wrong shit that you did, own up to it, and then make a decision to go in a different direction, and maybe you'll get out of this horrible situation alive.
Yeah.
But if you want to keep going the way you're going, this is how you go. So I like that. I like that aspect of it, like how he basically had a choice to go one way or another, and he just like stuck to the way he was always used to going. And he was trying to justify it, and that's what we end up having, and it didn't work out for him in the end.
Yeah, how did you feel about it, Jackie?
The same. Like at first, it was confusing. Like again, like when I first time I saw this, I was a kid, and then rewatched it again. I kind of understood what was going on. Like I said, it kind of gave me like Clockwork Orange vibes, especially with the rehabilitation experiments they had him going through. Especially when they had him see all that footage of everything. And then when they kind of made it into like, yeah, like a commentary type of thing where they were showing him meeting that Nazi guy, like, oh, this is what I did. This is what I did. This is what I do. And then showing everything and then kind of emphasizing the whole like the trope that we all hate hearing from people, especially white people, where they're like, oh, you know, but you guys kill your own. It's like, and?
Yeah.
The fuck does that matter? What does that matter? It was just interesting and confusing, you know, the little anecdotes they put into it. And then him meeting that Nazi guy in the jail cell, like he was saying, showing him his tattoos. He was just like, oh yeah, I murder people. This is what I do. Like, you know, obviously he was like insinuating, like, you know, I just kill black people. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And then the experimental portion of it, when he was showing all this footage and everything. But that conversation he had with that guy in the jail cell was very like, it was interesting, but also, like, you kind of felt unnerved about it, too. When he told, you know, Jerome, he was just like, you do it, too. You're one of my warriors, because you killed him, too. And you could see the unsettledness, like, in his face when he told him that. What are you talking about? And then you kind of see, like, he's somewhat reflecting of it, like, oh, shit, maybe he's right. But then, like Pierre said, he doesn't change. He's just like, yeah, I did it, and so what, you know? I like the subtle commentary, too, they put into it with the whole, like, you know, black-on-black crime. We always hear that all the time when stuff happens, especially now with the protesting going on. And they're like, well, you know, it's like, shut up. What is that? That's not relevant. What does that have to do with the other? You know, I kind of hate when that gets brought up, like, in a means of justifying things.
Yeah.
Like, it just irritates me. Yeah, like Pierce, it was an interesting take of like your life flashes before you die, and then in a way, his subconscious was giving him the decision, like either yeah, like own up to what you did, and then either you go this way or that way. And of course, that leads into the ending where I feel like at that moment, maybe the jail was also a metaphor for limbo. Like if you don't own up, then you're just gonna be sent to whatever place. At least that's what I took from it. Yeah, and the thing with the whole experimental thing in jail cell, that also was a commentary about that. You know how they always say, like, historically, people used to use inmates for, you know, experiments and shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's also historically fact. So that also kind of paid into and like played that commentary on that aspect as well. Like, it was, I feel like it touched upon so many things, that last story, that, like, you feel like you will have to rewatch it to get everything. Because it was like, it wasn't just like, okay, he gets died, he goes to this jail, the experimental thing, blah, blah. It feels like it was like 10 stories, 10 little elements into one whole thing. And the way they did that, like visually, story-wise, was just like, wow, you know?
I've always felt like conflicted about the final story. Like, not because I think anything is like wrong with it as a message. I just was always like, I was never really sure what to do with it. But listening to you two guys kind of helped me a lot with it. It's like, yeah, your life flashed before your eyes. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't think much. I thought about that a little bit, but I didn't think about that much until you guys went into it. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. It does show that. The conversation with him having with, like, the Nazi guy and Joe is probably, like, I would say the best part of the story. So I feel like it gets the point across. I think, I don't know, maybe I felt like a little bit like it was redundant in terms of getting the point across near the end. Like, he talks to that guy, then he goes through the experimentation. But I guess maybe he needed both to then get the point. Because a part of me wants to say, oh, maybe they could have got rid of one of the so-and-so torturers and then just went with the other. But I'm like, maybe it doesn't work without both. Like, we kind of need both for the story to make sense. I've always felt, like, really conflicted about the story. Like, I don't hate it. I don't fully love it. But I get what they're going for. And, but I guess, yeah, if you...
I remember you was conflicted.
Oh, yeah, word, that Kendrick verse. It was like, yeah, I was always kind of conflicted about it. But I guess, yeah, if you marry it to the ending of the story, then it makes it an even stronger story, because then you realize, even before you get to the hell part, but especially once you get to the hell part, you realize that, like, oh, these stories, in a way, were kind of telling these guys they need to seek redemption and completely for everything that they've done leading up until this moment. And it's kind of funny. I guess it was like, in a way, like you said, the jail was kind of limbo. And I guess in another way, you could almost kind of say the funeral home is kind of limbo until you make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't necessarily, it, like, granted, he could have just went up straight up and been like, yo, y'all dead, this is hell, I'm gonna tell y'all stories because y'all can't go nowhere. Like, that could have been what it was, but it wasn't that. It was like he walked him through all of these tales, Mr. Sims, he walked him through these tales and told them about these different ways that people have chosen to live their lives and ended up dead one way or another, whether they were the victim or the attacker. The guys who were there didn't take anything from those stories other than, cool, can we skip past all this shit and get to the things that we came here for? And they, even in the final story where they, like, yeah, point out, even before the story was told, they made it clear that they kind of knew the guy, you just weren't sure where. They even then still had the moment to at least be like, you know what, let's get off this path of what we're doing. Not just that he end up here, but we could be next. So it's kind of funny that it took them,
mm-hmm,
in the end, seeing their bodies in the coffins when he finally took him down there to see the shits, as he wanted to see the shits. Mr. Sims was great. I love Mr.
Yes,
Sims.
The
he was
shits.
So good. Clarence Williams was so good as that character. He was like the perfect creepy dude. He wasn't scared of anything that they were doing. He was just...
he was so on point.
The hair, everything about it was just like so, so good. And he showed them their, mm-hmm, bodies in their coffins, and they were like, that can't be true, we're dead. And he was like, oh yes, you are dead. Very. I was like, yo, this guy's,
yeah,
great. that was so, so, so good.
And it's funny because, like, it took Rusty 20 years to even make a sequel. Like, that's crazy.
That's insane.
That it took him that years to be able, because, you know, he couldn't for a while. And in one article, he mentioned that how it was thanks to Get Out. After Get Out came out with the success, that kind of drove the way to give us Tales from the Hood 2.
That's so insane, because, like, Get Out basically came out yesterday. This movie came out 20 years ago, like, over 20 years ago. And it took, like, a movie. It took something to happen 20 years later for it to be like, okay, you know what? You guys are right back then. Because clearly we had it right back then.
Yeah.
It's just like, they weren't given another chance. But it like the fact that this movie, I watched this movie recently, and I'm like, so much stuff in this is relevant now. So even with the last scene with the guy who didn't turn a new coat, that's something that people struggle with too. It's like, okay, there's so much injustice in the world. Then there's so much injustices that we have to face with each other. So it's like it always compounds each other, and that's part of the whole thing that like people was conflicted about. It's like even Kendrick Lamar had that song, I think it was The Black of the Berry. Like it was one of the most controversial songs on the album that he had because he was talking about all this stuff that he knows about black people, but he also said like the end, like, yo, well, I also killed somebody too. What does that put me? Cause like I love all this stuff about people, and I hate when people don't like us. But then, what happens when I'm the one who's doing it to black people too? Like it's always that struggle that we have. Like, okay, like where do I fall in that line? It's like and this kind of that story kind of embodies that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And then like the dude, the Nazi dude. Like yeah, I forgot to talk about him. Like that whole scene. Like I felt like it was necessary as a way to introduce that character. To the fact that like, oh man, you might want to rethink what you've been doing because look at the way they're seeing what you're doing. It's like so that opened it felt like even though it seemed a little bit redundant, I feel like it opened him up to the idea. Like I don't know how, even though he didn't really change a new leaf, but like he struggled with it a bit as he was going through the other things. Like he was flashing before his eyes. He was seeing it was a juxtapose. They were constantly juxtaposing what white people do and the way they treat black people and the way black people treat black people. And it's like, that's what all the scenes were like. That's what the Nazi was. It's like, hey, look, man, you're doing the same thing that I do. Like I kill niggas and then you do the same thing. Thank you. And then the next scene was like, the next torture was him. Like they were showing all the lynchings and they were juxtaposing it with all the scenes of him, like killing people too. It's like, hey, look at all these white people. They killed black people back in the day and now you're doing it. Then it took me to the last thing, like, okay, this is your chance, just again, to confront all that. What is there anything you want to say to these people? Like, because they were really talking to him. It wasn't like they were just like, oh, you did this. They were really like having a dialogue with him.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't really receptive to it at all. And it's like, okay, we tried. All right, man.
I want to add on to kind of what Jackie was saying about how the director Rusty was trying to do a sequel for so long, and then Get Out kind of opened the doors to that. I feel. I'm gonna pass this to you guys, but I guess I'm gonna get my feelings about it. I feel conflicted about that kind of process for a lot of reasons. Like I love Get Out, so we're gonna review that movie at some point, for sure. And it's no knock on the movie at all. It's more so a knock on, I guess, the people in studios and the people in charge of a lot of these decisions that I have no hand in. My biggest knock, I guess, on the fact that the studios saw Get Out, saw how much money it made, saw the conversation generated. And then was like, okay, great. We have a black property. Let's use our black property to then revitalize the fact that people are interested in black horror. My biggest problem with that is that it feels so much like what happened in the 90s with like UPN, like the channel UPN. I don't know if you guys remember it.
Mm-hmm. That was my favorite channel.
Yeah, it was a dope. All the black shows. It was like all the black shows on UPN. You had Girlfriends. Yeah. You had the Hughleys, you had even Bernie Mac, they threw it on there at one point. Like they all the black shows lived on UPN. And you know, now is a time in 2021 now is a time that people were starting to think back to that time and go, why did we get less black films and black stuff if we had so much black media back then? And I feel like a part of that is because a lot of these studios see this shit as a trend. And they're like, great. So black people are trendy today. Let's capitalize on it being trendy today. I think that's why it took 20 years more than anything else. And I hate that so much. And I hate even having to say that so much because I feel like in 15, 20 years when people maybe aren't talking about Get Out as much or maybe aren't thinking about anything outside of Get Out so much, we'll end up in the same space where we just landslide backwards. But what do you think, Jackie?
I agree. According to Rusty, the studio did obtain the rights because the original studio they released the first one in was bought out. And so they kind of lost the rights in a sense, but they couldn't really do anything with it. So that's kind of also why it took so long and nobody wanted to push through it. And then Get Out comes out. And yeah, I agree. It shouldn't have been that long. He should have been able to do it like that soon as. But I guess in a sense it's like, well, better late than ever. Because without Get Out, we wouldn't have Us and then all these other, like, you know, Black-centric horror movies that we see on Netflix and Hulu and Shudder. It's like a double-edged sword. You know, it's like, yeah, about time, but then why did it take all this time? You know, it could always both ways.
Capitalism. If they feel like they can't make money off of it, then they don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know how much the movie made when it first came out, but, and again, I've only just myself watched it, like, recently. But this was a great film. Like, and it's not great because it's out now, because I'm watching now. This was great when it came out, regardless of whether I saw it or not. I noticed people mm-hmm. saw it and loved it. And it's just like, we're ready for another one. And they would have enjoyed that one too. And it's like, it could have came out back then. There's no other reason other than they thought, like, well, you know, this is with the studio. But like, the new owners were like, they probably just like, I'm not going to bother with this. I don't see this as a viable thing.
Yeah.
Like, we can't be going to this. Nobody else is doing it. They don't want to be the ones to, like, be the pioneers. But, I mean, the 90s had a lot of great black horror films. Like, Candyman, The Blade came out then. It's like, and these are movies that prove that the genre works.
For Rusty, when he first released the film, he knew what he wanted to do, what to say with this movie, especially with the trailer. But the studio had no idea how to advertise it. And so when the first trailer came out, he said that how, like, he saw it, it looked crazy. You know what the hell it was going to be about. No one knew what, because it didn't really tell you what to expect. Like, oh, this is what this movie's going to be about. No one really knew. He knew what he wanted to do with it. But I think the studio was just scared for it to be political. Because if you think about it, this movie was kind of political. It talked about society, you know, because let's face it, you know, black history is black horror, you know. He knew what he wanted to do with it, but it really was the studio that fucked it up, because they didn't know how to push it into the box office. It actually did really poorly in the box office, apparently. That's why not many people know about it, knew it existed. And Rusty has said that when he meets people and he asks about, oh, have you ever seen my film, Tales from the Hood, they'll say, oh, no. And then when he goes into discussing what it's about, he gets the response of like, oh, if I would have known that's what it was about, I would have saw it in theaters. Or, oh, I should have saw it before, you know, it was out of print or whatever. And he gets that response a lot. So it was really the studio's fault, you know, because he didn't want it to be too political, but in a sense, he kind of wanted it to be that way. Because, again, like he said before, like, this isn't a horror comedy. It's just horror. It's horrifying, you know.
Poor marketing absolutely makes and breaks projects, and mm-hmm. like, poor marketing, like, if that's the case, then poor marketing absolutely killed this, because without a good trailer, without them pushing it really well, not letting people know what it's actually about, it goes nowhere. Because I this has happened to me before, where there was a Broadway play, like, it was a rap related Broadway play, All Eyes on Me. It was about Tupac. The marketing for the way the marketing was about it made me think, like, oh, maybe it's just like they're just gonna be like rapping a lot of his songs on stage, stuff like that. But it wasn't. And the marketing, like, when I saw the posters for it, I didn't really understand that. But then I heard one of the people from it talking about it, and they explained that, like, oh, no, this is actually a character, and the character has his own story arc and stuff like that, and he relates some of these songs to some of Tupac's songs to his life at different points. So it's not like this wasn't necessarily a play about mm-hmm. Tupac, or, and it's just like people's reaction to songs. It had its own story arc, but the marketing didn't tell you that well. And then the play never really got past, like, its pre-shows. It never really went live, but it was really good for people saw it, like, and found out what it was, like, oh, this is really good. And then when I found out about it, like, what it was really about, it was already too late, because it was already done. And I'm like, oh, that kind of sucks. And that's very similar to what seems to have happened to Tales in the Hood back in 1995.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I didn't know about that. And this was a Broadway show or a show on?
Yeah, so I had a love hate relationship with Hamilton, because so this happened before Hamilton, mm-hmm. and then like out and then Saul Williams was like one of the people behind it, like the poet, the rapper Saul Williams, and I was really like, I was like, oh, I really want to see this, but then by the time I found out about it, the pre-shows was already done, and then I'm like, oh, so this got canceled, like the marketing was shit, so this just didn't went nowhere. So I was mad. So when Hamilton comes out, I'm like, wait, they made another rap Broadway show after they tried it? And, like, And now this one's blowing up. I'm like, so I was like, for the longest time, I was not happy with Hamilton. I was not a Hamilton fan. And then it came out on Disney Plus and I saw it and I'm like, oh, this is like, this was amazing. But at the time when it first came out, I was tight because like, I wanted to see the All Eyes on Me thing and I couldn't. And then like, now this thing's coming up and it's like blowing up. And I'm like, oh, but nobody want, like, literally like a year or two ago, this was going on. Nobody wanted nothing to do with it. But that's marketing for you. Like Hamilton had way better marketing.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, according to Rusty, he wants to do a fourth one.
I hope he does. I haven't checked out any of the sequels yet, but I hope he does.
Yeah, neither have I. I haven't seen the second one or third one. Yeah, he actually wants to push for a fourth one. You know, I don't know if you guys knew, you probably didn't know, but Spike Lee helped him in this, the first one. He worked on this one as well, Spike Lee.
Yeah.
He couldn't get him back for the other sequels because time restraints and whatever. The interesting story of how he first met Spike Lee is just so funny. Because before this, you know, Rusty had a film called Fear of a Black Hat. That was his first thing. And he was featured in the Spike Lee movies. School Days?
Yeah.
And that's how they met. And then Spike Lee was just like, oh, I saw your film. It was really good. Do you have any future projects? And that's when Rusty told him, like, well, there's this thing called Tales of the Hood. You interested? And that's kind of how the project came to be. That's literally how they birthed that whole thing.
So pretty great. Cool. Yeah. Collaboration should look like.
Yeah, I remember seeing Spike Lee's name on the credits, but I didn't realize like what his role was.
Yeah. And you know you're watching a Spike Lee film when there's always like political commentary in the film.
Word. 100%.
There's always some of it. There's always some of it. Yeah, you know you're watching that.
I have to say, when the movie opened up and like the three characters were talking, like before they went into the funeral home, I was like, this film was definitely made in the 90s. Like this, just like the dialogue, the dialogue, the outfits, like the candor, the banter between them, just everything was just, it screamed 90s to me.
Yeah. The 90s, man. I miss the 90s.
Like, this is a 90s hood movie.
It was definitely around the time that those, like Boys in the Hood and those kind of films came out, so I'm sure it pulled the direct inspiration from that. So, yeah, it's dope, man. It's dope.
That's also why the studio kind of feared to push the movie, because he had the title Tales from the Hood. Because, yeah, it did come out the wrong time, like, Boys in the Hood came out, and the studio kind of deemed the word hood as, like, a make-or-break film. But, of course, Rusty was just like, why does that have to make-or-break the film? You know, it was really weird, man. The studio did a fucked up job.
Yeah, they kind of ruined it. But, Pierre, thank you for coming, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Word, you want to tell people where they can find you or something, where you want to be found?
Oh, yeah. Find me on Instagram and Twitter, P_M Williams. That's my handle everywhere.
Dope. Jackie, you want to send this out?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Before I send this out, I kind of have to do an update. We don't have a Twitter anymore, guys. If you ever try to find us, we don't have a Twitter anymore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, no. We just decided we're going to focus on just, like, Instagram for the time being. Because the horror people on Instagram are actually really fun. So if you are a fan of this podcast and you use Instagram and you like horror, I would highly recommend plugging yourself into the horror community on Instagram, because those people are really fun. There are a lot of great people on there. So, and of course, you can find us, Terra Nova Podcast.
Mm-hmm. And on Facebook as well. We're pretty interactive. So, yeah. But yeah, so I guess I'll end it as I usually do. Ooh-wee-you. Ghost goodbye.